I recently received a friend request that reminded me of this story, so I'm going to share it here. This happened after I went to university. So, I was 18. I made an effort to make friends after I moved onto campus, and ended up with a few groups to hang out with, including a new girlfriend, and plenty of people from my class that I liked well enough. There was one class before lunch where it was traditional for people to go to the cafeteria afterwards to eat in pairs or threes. I wasn't very discerning about who I'd have lunch with, because I got on fine with most people from the class, and we were all trying to make an effort to be social. So when one girl, Lily, asked if I wanted to eat lunch together after that class, I didn't have any reason not to go. We talked about school and that kind of thing. Nothing noteworthy, but she did ask me to get lunch with her again the next week. It became a pattern, and there wasn't exactly a way to start saying no suddenly. It was fine, but it did mean I lost the chance to eat lunch with anyone else on those days. In hindsight, I suppose that was the point. One day in class, I asked someone if I could add them on social media. This happened in front of Lily. I saw her face jerk towards me from a couple of seats over. It was such a sharp reaction that it was hard to ignore, and I still remember it. By the time I got home later that day, Lily had sent me a friend request. No friends in common. Don't know how she knew my last name. I was a bit surprised, but I guess she just dug through the university's social media pages and found me through there. It gave me a bad feeling, but surely it was fine. She ended up messaging me a lot and commenting on anything I posted. I told myself she was just awkward, and we became friends. If not close, I'd known worse people. She still always got me to go to lunch with her after our one shared class. Other than that, we rarely spent time together in person. I saw her around sometimes, but I never went out of my way to hang out with her. So it was mostly online messaging and seeing each other in group settings. Coincidentally, my girlfriend was also called Lily. This was something that clearly bothered Lily. Not my girlfriend, who couldn't have found it less interesting. It's a common name. She occasionally hinted that she wanted my girlfriend to pick a different name, or joked about her not suiting it. She clearly didn't like my girlfriend at all, and I had an idea of why. It was hard to ignore by this point. Lily was starting to unsubtly hint that she had a crush on me. I tried not to address it, because what was I going to say? I've never known what to do when a friend makes a pass at me. I was also not interested in the least. Even ignoring the weird stuff she pulled? Lily was not my type at all. She tended to dress and act in a way somewhere between a 50s housewife and one of those adults who's still obsessed with Disney princesses. If you can picture that. Things took an uncomfortable turn on the day of our last shared class of the year. Instead of asking me to lunch like she usually did, Lily asked if I'd go for a walk with her. Again, I didn't exactly know how to refuse, so I said all right. Our campus was bordered by a large patch of woodland. Lily led me into the woods, and the sounds of her fellow students slowly faded away. She sat down on a log, and I joined her. She started talking about how she was going to miss me over the summer. I tried placating her, but I didn't want to be there. Especially since she seemed almost on the verge of tears. I think I tried making an excuse about having plans with my girlfriend, but before I could leave, Lily chose to kiss me without warning. It was uncomfortable to say the least. I got out of there and was happy to think I wouldn't see her for a while. I came back to university after the summer, moving into a house with my friends. Without going off topic, there were some serious issues in my friend group. A lot of petty arguing and worse. I broke up with my girlfriend around the start of that year as well. Basically, the whole mess made me recontextualize things with Lily because it suddenly didn't seem as bad. That said, I didn't want to be alone with her. We mostly talked online. She was still constantly messaging me, after all. One upside of everything was that I started dating a boy. Lily was not pleased to hear that news. I think she hoped to sneak in after I broke up with my girlfriend. But, as I said before, that was never going to happen. There wasn't a big gap between my breakup and this new relationship, so she must have thought she missed her chance to be with me. This is where the story gets bad. At this time, I was fairly active on Tumblr. I occasionally talked about my life and mostly reblogged photos and stuff. I was on there one day when something odd happened. One of the blogs I followed had received an ask with some phrases I recognized. It took a second to register that it was taken from my About page. This made me freeze. I read the message properly. Someone was asking this completely random person to analyze a section of text from my page, asking for their opinion on the type of person who would write it. I cannot stress how messed up it was to see people talking about me, like I was a character in a book they were trying to study. The reply was basically, "I don't know, sorry." But the important thing was that the question hadn't been anonymous. It was linked to someone's blog. Obviously, I wanted to know who had taken such a bizarre interest in me. As far as I knew, no one in real life, other than my boyfriend, knew about my page. Well, no prizes for guessing who was behind it. What I found was like a shrine. She was using a fake name, but I recognized Lily all over that thing. It was this cutesy pink and red page. There were a few posts about her interests, but most of the content was focused on her primary interest, me. Most of the posts were about me. There were accounts of things I'd done recently. He told me about such and such. He went to a nightclub recently, etc. As well as references to things from as far back as I'd known her. It was clear she'd been keeping tabs on me, both online and offline. Gathering up every scrap of information she could find. Gathering up every scrap of information she could about my life, and hoarding it here in her collection. She talked about us eating lunch together, and how special our dates had been to her, as if it was anything more than acquaintances getting food after class. But she wrote it as if it had been mutual. She quoted lyrics from my favorite song, and talked about how she'd always be there for me, no matter who else came into my life. Lots of references to loving me just the way he is. Which answered another mystery about an anonymous letter I'd received earlier that year with the same wording. It got worse. There were a lot of posts about my boyfriend as well. These weren't so nice. They got vicious, talking about how he didn't deserve me. He didn't know what he had. If she was with me, she'd be jealous of anyone else who came near me. So my boyfriend not being a jealous person meant he didn't love me? It was angry and hateful. I didn't like to think about the sort of person who could write so obsessively being fixated on me. One thing that didn't make sense at first was that the blog also made plenty of references to Lily's best friend, Steven. She had never mentioned this person to me. Her posts talked a lot about Steven and how great a friend he was, and how much fun they had together, how he looked out for her, etc. I was trying to work out whether this was an online friend when one specific post made it all click. She had posted a photo and captioned it with, "Steven sent this to me. He knew I would like it and I love it." Or something like that. The problem was, the photo was taken from my own page. I hadn't sent it to her. She took it from my page and claimed this fictional best friend of hers shared it with her. Because in her head, she'd split me into two people. In her messed up fantasy life, I was both the perfect best friend who was always looking out for her, and her soulmate who was bound to end up with her when I finally got over my sweet, kind boyfriend and all the other easy girls I hung out with that she made dozens of posts complaining about. Who was she complaining to? Oh, Lily had an audience. She asked open questions about me and her relationship with me, and got messages back from her followers. People who took what she said at face value. I saw a bunch of random people agreeing with this stalker that my boyfriend didn't deserve me, and we were bound to break up soon so I could be with Lily, the person I was clearly supposed to be with. She had this fake fanfiction version of my life up for anyone to share their opinion on, and she'd made herself out to be the hero of it all. I went maybe a month back into this page's history. I did not look at everything that was there. It was too much. So, I'm not sure how long this had been going on. I sent Lily a message confronting her about the blog. She said nothing. And I cannot stress how weird it was to have found pages and pages dedicated to me. With her talking about how she was in love with me and would make sure we ended up together, slamming my boyfriend, and building a fantasy life with two different versions of me in it that she clearly believed to be real. Then, acting like it hadn't happened. She said nothing. She didn't address it. She just changed the subject. Even after I pushed. And it was like she hadn't even registered what I said. I've never seen anything else like it. She deleted the page, of course. Or at least changed the name and hid it so I never found it again. It wasn't the end, though. I wasn't going to hang out with her anymore. But we were still shoved together in classes, and she had started to actually scare me with what she might do next. I'm kind of a paranoid person. Knowing someone was obsessively keeping track of me for who knows how long freaked me out. The next thing she pulled was trying to seduce my boyfriend. It was an absolutely useless attempt that only made him uncomfortable. He told me about it right away. What was her plan there? Did she hope to tell me he cheated and wait for me to break up with him? Why would I want her after that? When that didn't work out for her, she tried hitting on three of my other friends. None of them took the bait. She ended up dating one of my former housemates for a while, but made sure to send me messages while they were together, letting me know she'd rather be with me. No thanks. Lily made sure to stay in my life the whole time I was at university. There was a time when I tried to pull away from her, and she ended up starting rumors about me and damaging a career opportunity I'd put a lot of work into. I don't know what else she did behind my back, but it made me realize it was safer to let her think she was a part of my life while ignoring her, rather than doing something that would cause her to get angry. After I graduated, Lily still wanted to spend time together, but I knew I didn't have to now. I made excuses about work and barely talked to her after that point. I almost entirely stopped posting on social media that I knew she knew about. Of course, she didn't give up that easily. She tried to start conversations, asked me to meet up with her, attempts I usually ignored. I didn't like to think she was still tracking me online, but she probably was. I don't know how, but she'd occasionally reference things I mentioned online somewhere. Somewhere she shouldn't have known about. The last time we had a real conversation, she sent me a message out of nowhere. We hadn't spoken at all in months. And we hadn't talked about anything serious in much longer than that. Thinking about that conversation still makes my skin crawl. But I'll summarize what happened. At first she asked me some questions about how long had I known I was queer. I told her some basic stuff, the kind of thing I'd tell anyone who asked. Then she changed the subject. She started talking about how I would feel about her if she was a boy. About wanting to be a boy for me. The messages quickly became fetishistic. She went into plenty of detail about fantasies she had of the two of us. Again, we were not friends at this point. We'd never been especially close, at least not from my perspective, and we had barely spoken for years. I can't imagine sending messages like that to even a close friend, let alone someone who barely knows you. I tried telling her not to pull this crap with me, but she decided to change tactics. She sent photos of herself, followed by a bunch of messages. Maybe 4 or 5 a minute, way too fast for me to reply before the next one arrived. Basically quoting back what I told her about myself and my past earlier. She was telling me these things as if they had happened to her. She was role-playing as me. The worst part was that she seemed to believe it was real. That those things had actually happened to her. Even when she was quoting me word for word. Things I'd told her only hours before were now her life. It was like she was trying to absorb my history, to take it over, to make my life part of her. Yeah, I didn't talk to her again after that. I ignored future attempts she made to talk to me, and I eventually silently deleted her from the inactive social media, which was her only real way of contacting me. I really thought she might finally move on. A few days ago, she sent me a friend request. It's sitting there, unanswered. Because I know if I delete it, she'll only send another one. Lily and I met nearly 12 years ago. This story is just the highlights. And even then, it's only the stuff I know about for sure. A lot happened behind my back. I know it did. So, girl who spent 12 years obsessing over me, fetishizing me, stalking me, and harassing me, let's not meet again. The fantasy life you built for the two of us in your head is the only place you'll be seeing me anytime soon. To understand my story, you sort of have to know a tiny bit about trespassing laws in our country. In that, we don't have any, so long as you're respectful and non-destructive. You can walk over any hills you like, and in my case, camp on any beach of your choosing, so long as once you leave the area, it is how you found it. I used to love camping when I was little. Our family would go multiple times a year with a large group of my parents' friends and their kids. On average, there were maybe 10 of us at a time, which was a bit of a logistical challenge, as we always headed out to this one really remote beach on the coast. Actually, we weren't the only ones. There were always yachts bobbing just off the shore with people in them, and other campers lining up and down the beach. Most of them also had children or teenagers, so it wasn't a wild party scene. It was very much an informal family holiday spot. There was even a small building with toilets and showers installed nearby, even though this was the middle of nowhere. I guess the local council must have figured it out and got sick of people peeing behind the bushes. We took a trip up in spring 2011. I'm really bad with time, but I know this because I got my dog in winter of 2010. After picking her out that November from the shelter as a birthday gift from me to me, as I paid her adoption fee. Reddit, I know you love dogs, and she will be very important to the story later on, so let me tell you a little bit about Parmesan. Parmesan came to me as a 6-month-old puppy who had been rescued from a dogfighting situation. We're not entirely sure what breed she is exactly, but my best guess is a Lurcher / Staffy mix. She is a wonderfully well-tempered dog with people, and most dogs. But you absolutely do not threaten her. She'll have you. So by the time of this camping trip, I'd had Parmesan for a few months. She'd never come camping with us before, but as far as my family are concerned, dogs go on camping trips. So, when we all piled into the car, she came too. Unusually though, none of my family friends could make it. So it was only me, my sister, my dad, and my mom. I didn't mind. I wasn't that attached to the other kids. I'd rather play with my dog, and I'd still have my sister. The drive took the best part of 6 hours, and because we'd left a bit later, although I don't remember why we'd left later than usual, we arrived at sunset. Not a good time to be building a tent, but we'd expected to arrive to other campers already set up, and the beach illuminated in campfires. The beach was empty. In spite of this, my parents started taking stuff out and trying to build the tent. They asked us to fetch some of the lighter bags from the boot of the car while they sat pointing a flashlight at the sand to see properly. I rolled down the window of the car for Parmesan before getting out. It was pretty hot for that time of year, and I wanted her to have air. Always gotta be looking out for my furry little homie. As we're fumbling about in the dark, on a beach, in the middle of nowhere, it's pretty spooky. The one road that led to this beach was circular and had a bridge over the water, meaning you could basically circle around the beach like a big O shape if you felt like it. I wasn't really paying any attention to the road. I was complaining I was tired, as kids are wont to do, but my mom was. After maybe 15 minutes of my dad trying to nail the tent into the sand, my mom's asking him, had he seen that car drive around? It's been a few times. My dad kind of shrugged her off. He's sort of like that. I don't know if he said anything back to her, but after a few more minutes, a car pulled up next to ours on the road, and someone got out. It was maybe 15 or 20 feet away from the cars too, where we were, and the light was pretty low except for the torches. We weren't expecting to see anyone else out here at this point, and I think my mom said it must be the security. I don't know why a random beach would have security. I think what she meant was the Wildlife Trust or something, as they do occasionally come down to be nosy. The guy was walking pretty unevenly. He must have been drunk or high because he had that stagger to him. There was absolutely no way this guy was sober. Cool. A junkie. Not an unusual find, but it's rare to see them in the wild. As he walked into flashlight range, we realized he was carrying a large knife. Maybe 15 inches. Although I was small at the time, so maybe my sense of scale was off. I don't like my dad, but credit to him, once he saw this, he got up immediately, holding onto the camping mallet and put us all behind him. The man began to shout wildly at us that we can't camp here, and he was just letting us know. My dad tried to initially be a bit low-key with the guy and told him that he was fine, we'd leave. This didn't work. He kept coming closer to us. So my dad started shouting, and the man kept shouting back. My sister and I were crying. I remember shaking. I was utterly terrified, as I'm sure anyone would be in this situation. It really did seem like this guy and my dad were going to fight, and I'm going to be honest, I didn't fancy my dad's chances. While it's grim to consider, I'm absolutely convinced he would have killed my dad, and possibly us as well, once he was done, as I don't think my mother would have had common sense to run with us. I love her, but she's always put Dad and her relationship with him above us. This isn't how it went down. A bolt from the black, like a wolf descending on its prey, took us all by surprise. Most of all, the man with the knife. In that moment, Parmesan was the apex predator large canines represent in nature. She got him good by the arm and clamped down hard, ripping his jacket and shredding the skin underneath. He dropped the knife as it had been in the arm she got him by. He kicked her, he punched her, and eventually got her off. He grabbed the knife from the sand and ran back to his car and drove off. Parmesan didn't follow him. She stayed with us, muzzle covered in blood. Quickly as we could, we gathered our things and all got back in the car. All pretty shook up by the incident. I looked Parmy over. She was okay, but the car's window was much more open than I'd left it. We think what happened was when the shouting started, she must have put her paws up on the gap I'd left for her. As it was an old car, and had the rolly down windows and not an electric button, we think she must have been able to hit it with her paws to force it down enough to squeeze out. This is not the end of my story. We were all pretty scared, and since we had a dog with us, we couldn't book into a hotel for the night. My parents decided to just drive home so that we could all feel safe, but first had to drive into the nearest town for petrol, as they were kind of low. I spent the time trying to clean Parmesan up a little. I'd always loved dogs, but what she'd just done for me blew my mind. As we drove into town, we came across a petrol station, but it looked closed. My dad drove up closer to get a better look and stuck his head out in the window to get a better look at the sign. My mom asked him what on earth he was doing, and he told her he was trying to see when it opens. Never. My heart fucking sank. Parked in the corner, behind a van so we hadn't seen him at first, was the man with the knife. He was sitting on the bonnet of his car, using some tissue paper to clean up his arm. It looked pretty bad. Without stopping to refuel or look anywhere else in town, my dad drove right out of there. He decided to go to the next town over, but this was remote. The next town over was 60 miles away. We didn't have that much petrol, we realized as we began driving. We were going to break down. "That's fine," Dad said. We had AA cover. They'd come tow us home, or at least to somewhere acceptable for the night. Better than staying in the last town. After driving for maybe 5 minutes, lights flash us from behind. Another car. The same car the man had been driving. It was him, following us. He must have realized we were low on petrol. The next half hour was one of the worst half hours of my life. I had a complete and utter breakdown, as did everyone, really. I could tell my parents were trying to keep it under wraps so it wouldn't upset us, but we weren't really little kids. We were both double digits. We knew how dangerous the situation was. Dad turned off the radio to conserve petrol, and the man followed us for over 55 miles before he peeled away onto another road. Our fuel meter was on the big red E for empty for the last 10 miles. We were driving on fumes. I don't really believe in God, but if he does exist, that was definitely one of his miracles. Once we got there, we drove into a petrol station and refilled to a full tank before driving the rest of the way home. Sister and I slept in the car after that, I only woke up once we made it all the way home. Just grateful nothing worse had happened than that. After getting some sleep, my mom phoned the non-emergency line for the police and reported what had happened. They never got back to her after that, but apparently the woman she spoke to said they may wish to in the future, as he matched the description given of a suspect wanted in relation to a murder charge. No idea if he actually was that guy, or just a random psycho, as I said. They never got back to her. So what's the takeaway then? Other than crazy man on the beach, let's not meet. Well, for me, it's that I love Parmesan. She's still with us now. Old as the hills, and twice as grizzled as one of my mom's friends likes to joke. I don't know why she did what she did that day. I couldn't tell you what her thought process was. What I do know is that this poor puppy was born into an environment where they abused and neglected her, only to be rescued and taken to a shelter where her mother and siblings all found homes before her. Despite how badly people had treated her, when I took her home, she forgave, but never forgot. I think the saying is, I never trust a person who doesn't like a dog. But I always trust a dog when they don't like a person. They have a very good understanding of human body language, and I think she must have understood how much danger we were in. If you're able to, please adopt. You might find yourself in a situation like mine one day. I promise you, if you're willing to save a four-legged friend's life, they will pay you back tenfold if they're able to. Without a thought for their own safety. I paid £78 for Parmesan's adoption fee, which is a lot when you're a kid. But it chills me to my bones, knowing if I hadn't been so insistent on a dog, I might be dead. This happened during the summer of 2015, and I had just graduated high school, and I still lived in my hometown. I was out with some friends, and it was getting really late, like around 1 a.m., so I decided to head home. I stopped by a drugstore close to my house that was 24/7 to pick up some aspirin and snacks. The one I went to was in the same parking lot as a supermarket. This is important. I parked my car close to the store, and it was empty. There were no more than two other cars in this giant parking lot, and I was nowhere near them. I head in and grab what I came to get quickly, because I had this overwhelming feeling of dread the whole time. I felt like someone was watching me, but I couldn't see anyone else there besides me and the cashier. Then, after I had gotten everything I intended to buy, I stalled checking out and just went aisle by aisle, looking at random things, because I thought whoever was out there would leave if I took too long. Really, the whole time I thought I was being paranoid, because I wasn't used to going out late. I had strict parents growing up. After 20 minutes of that, I pay and leave the store. I get to the door and literally bolt to my car, pepper spray in hand, and lock myself in. I turned my head to check the back seat, and right before I could breathe a sigh of relief because no one was there, someone tapped on my window. I looked around before I left the store near the entrance, and no one was around my car. So, how did I not see a person there? This is where I really freaked out. I don't know if this person was Ted Bundy inspired or what, but this was odd. He was a very handsome blonde man with slightly long hair and a cast on his arm. Now my first instinct was to drive off, but he was leaning on the front hood part of my car, and I didn't want to hurt him, so I rolled down my window down just an inch so he could speak and maybe back up just a bit so I could drive off without hitting him. But nope. He stayed glued on my car. He then asked me if I could help him with directions and look up an address for him. I said, I really need to go, sir. Maybe ask in the drugstore. They can help.
Already went to the supermarket, and they couldn't help.
That place closed at 8, and there was no way this guy has just been lurking around for 5 hours waiting for some random girl's help. He then went on about feeling really tired, and if I could just give him water or food I bought since he had no money. I told him okay and began to reach to my passenger side to grab the chips I got and began to roll the window down slightly. And, like I expected, he moved closer to my window. But now, he was off the car, so I hit the gas. He chased my car and I heard a scraping sound on the side as I pulled away. I didn't drive directly home in case I was followed, and drove down the highway for an hour because I was so distraught over what happened. I finally got home, and my entire side of my car had been scraped from the door almost to the trunk. I'm really sure he used a knife or some sharp object because it was a really rough scrape. I reported the incident, but they never found him, or any similar incidents in my town. He was watching me the whole time, maybe from the windows of the store, because how else would he have known I bought food? I also think he hid behind my car so I couldn't see him when I came out. I feel like he was trying to get me before I got in my car, but I got in too fast. So, creep in the parking lot? Let's not meet again. This happened a long time ago. I'm guessing back in 2006. And I can't have been older than 4 years old at the time. Yet, I vividly remember the fear I felt during this encounter. It was an early summer morning, and the sun was up, but few people were out. In fact, the streets were practically dead that morning. My mom decided to take my sister, only 1 year old, seated in a stroller, and I to throw away some garbage at the garbage station. I might add that the garbage station is kind of secluded from nearby houses, bordering one of those deep, dark forests of eastern Sweden. Since I was only 4 years old when this happened, the memories from the incident have faded a lot. However, my mom remembers all of it. She says that upon entering the garbage station, she immediately got an eerie feeling of being watched. I remember that feeling too. I felt creeped out even though I didn't know why I was scared. I guess I could sense my mom's fear. Walking alone that secluded garbage station, my mom suddenly stopped and told me this. Hold on to the stroller as hard as you can and don't let go, no matter what. That's my most vivid memory I have of this, and I don't think I'll ever forget those words. I'll at least never forget how they made me feel. It was as if my blood turned to ice. I just froze. My mom sounded stern, but even a toddler can sense when someone's scared shitless. My mom was definitely afraid of something. The rest is just a blur. I don't remember much apart from the aforementioned, so I'll let the rest of the story be told from the perspective of my mother. This is the recollection of her experience, recalled to the best of my abilities, but in my own words. Not far from where we were standing, a truck was parked with a man seated in the front. Nothing unusual. A lot of truck drivers stopped to rest by the side of the road. But this man was staring. He wouldn't stop staring. He stared right at me, examining my body with the determined gaze of a predator. Gluing the three of us in his sight, he truly seemed pleased by the fear he'd instilled in our faces. And his eyes? They were something else. Almost as if they didn't belong to a human. but rather to a predator on the savannah. I felt like prey, stuck in the claws of a lion. I just couldn't move. That's when he smiled at me. I remember that dead smile. Those cold, calculating eyes. And the way he licked his lips. Almost as if to say, I could kill you if I wanted to. Back to my own perspective. I believe this was the point in time, into this strange encounter, when my mom told me to hold onto the stroller, to hold on tightly and not let go. My mom is a small woman, 160 centimeters, weighing only about 45 kilograms, and she could easily have been overpowered by the overweight man in the truck. My mom later admitted she was afraid he'd jump out of the truck and knock her out, possibly assaulting her, or even kidnapping me or my one-year-old sister. We bolted out of there. We didn't throw away much garbage that morning. We just turned around and walked home as fast as a mom can do, with a stroller and a four-year-old by her side. We never talked about what happened that day. Up until very recently. The incident has always lingered somewhere in the back of my mind, as that weird thing that happened when I was a child. And every time I walk past that garbage station, I get a weird feeling in the pit of my stomach. As previously mentioned, this happened around 2006. Fast forward to 2008, the face of a 10-year-old little girl called Engla was printed across the front page of every newspaper in sight. She had been abducted, sexually assaulted, and murdered. And the perpetrator was an overweight truck driver named Anders Eklund, now known as one of Sweden's most infamous killers. Anders Eklund was charged with the murder of Engla, alongside the rape and murder of a woman named Pernilla. He's also suspected of abducting another little girl, who's still missing, making him a pedophile, a serial rapist, and a serial killer. My mom says that when she saw Eklund's picture in the paper, especially when she saw those cold, familiar eyes, she knew he was the creepy man from the garbage station. That early morning all those years ago. Thinking how my mom, or my sister, or me, or all of us could have been his victims. That sends chills up my spine. Anders, even though you're behind bars, let's not ever meet again. This happened a few years ago, in my old, one-person flat. I had a strange feeling that something wasn't right for a few days. Like I was sure that food in the fridge was less than I put back the last time. I found pillows for my couch on the floor, stuff like that. I lived alone back then, so there wasn't anyone else with access to my flat. Or, so I thought. Well, one night I woke up around 1 in the morning, sweating. And even though I didn't remember, was sure I woke from a nightmare. Since I was drenched in sweat, I decided to take a shower. So I put my phone up in the bathroom for music, turned on the water, and enjoyed my shower. A few minutes in, I heard the door move. I never close it, but it still never moves. I took a look at the shower curtain and saw a shadow against it, and a look at my phone confirmed someone was there, since I could clearly see a reflection in my screen that showed someone standing next to the shower curtain. It took me a lot not to scream and to keep acting like I didn't notice anything, while silently taking the shower head off the holding and turning the water all the way to hot. I'm still kinda impressed of that quick thinking. Our water got really hot when you cranked it all the way to hot. and a few seconds later steam was raising, and the water hurt my feet flowing to the drain. I turned around, ripped the shower curtain open, and held the shower head right at the person behind. It was a woman. She screamed in pain. I whacked her in the face with the shower head and jumped out of the shower and ran to the door, taking the key out of the lock and locking it closed behind me. A little later, she started to bang on the door, but the door didn't give. Thank God for German quality work. I called the cops and went to the kitchen to get my big kitchen knife, just for safety. I felt like my throat was closing up when I saw it missing, and realized there's only one place where it could possibly be right now. The police came and arrested the woman, who turned out to have been the former person living in the flat and was evicted after not paying rent. Seems she made a copy of the key and came into the flat when I was at work, and sometimes at night. It's possible that what woke me up in the first place was her. And honestly, I don't even want to think about it. Ever since then, I always insist that the locks are changed when I move into a new place. I was 9 or 10, and this was back in the early 90s, when latchkey kids were fine and no one blinked an eye. I was home alone and decided to walk to my local Blockbuster, maybe a 30-minute there and back. I had done it before on my bike and wasn't worried or scared. I took off and got about halfway down my block when all the craziness started. Side note. Unbeknownst to me, my neighbor's son was a drunk or drug addict, or something was wrong with him. My parents evidently knew, but didn't tell me because he was moved out a while back, I guess. All of a sudden, here comes a cherry picker roaring down the street, going super fast. I remember because several other cars passed, and this one made me jump and look up. There was a man, shirtless in the top of the cherry picker, hollering stuff like,
"Woohoo, yeah!"
and your basic drunken BS. I immediately felt uncomfortable, and before I could decide what I wanted to do, he saw me. He yelled something out at me, and threw a beer bottle out. That freaked me out, and I immediately decided this trip was over, and I was heading home. I turned around and started back towards my house, but nervously decided to start heading into people's yards to make it look like I was going into a house. That didn't help at all. He was already heading towards me. The driver was now slapping his hand on the truck door, obviously drunk as hell. They were yelling out to me with garbage like, "Hey little girl, where are you going?" I ducked behind a house and saw a large pine tree between the two yards, so I jetted out and ducked behind it to see if they were still following me. To my absolute terror, the guy in the bucket goes,
"I see you hiding behind that tree, little girl."
At that point, I lost it. I ran as fast as I could in a sheer panic to my house, backyard, and ran in, locking it behind me. I ran and checked the other locks and went into my parents' master bathroom and crawled into their shower and put a towel over me. I was sobbing. Called my mom and dad, who told me to hang up and call 911. I did, and they asked me if I was hidden, which was so terrifying. Nothing happened after that. The cops arrived right after my parents pulled in and acted like they had been home. Eye roll, but they're good people. The cops actually found the men, and they were arrested and charged with my stuff and several other things they had evidently been up to that day. I wasn't the only one they harassed in our neighborhood, but I was the only child. And, of course, it was our neighbor's drunk and disorderly son. So yeah, bad neighbor's creepy son? I'm sure you're in prison by now, but let's never meet. Got some Dunkin' this morning, and it brought the story back to mind. Figured I'd share it here. During high school and college, I worked at Dunkin' Donuts for about 7 years and bounced around to a few different locations. I was used to working at the Dunkin' in my town, where we would get the yeast rings delivered periodically and frost them ourselves as needed. I transferred to a new shop about a half hour from my house with all the same responsibilities, except for the donuts. They were delivered by corporate, and they arrived frosted almost perfectly. They looked like the plastic donuts they show in commercials. Always round and not squished together, and they would dip them in frosting so it was evenly spread and neat. It was a busy Saturday morning and was close to Valentine's Day, so we had a fresh order of brownie batter donuts delivered that morning. We were slammed, which was normal for a weekend, so it wasn't out of the ordinary to see my manager, who I'll call Jeremy, running around stressed out. When he first ran past me, I didn't think anything of it, and I continued making sandwiches at the sandwich station. He rushed by carrying a pastry tray, and I watched him begin frantically throwing something in the trash, looking worried as hell. At first I laughed and just said, "Jeremy, what the heck are you doing?" He straightened out and looked absolutely beside himself. I had never seen Jeremy look so lost. So I asked what was going on and if something was wrong. "Someone filled the brownie batter donuts with staples." He told me he got a phone call from corporate that one of the stores in our chain, which contained 10, had somehow discovered multiple staples in every donut in their order. That was at least 48 donuts for our store, and more or less for the other 9, depending on their sales. They told Jeremy we had to get rid of the most recent delivery, because whoever put the batter in the filler dumped a ton of staples in it as well. Thankfully, we hadn't sold all of the previous order yet from that morning, because it was still relatively early. But the more I thought about it, the more I felt like I was going to be sick. What if a young child had gotten one of them? I pictured some family sitting at home on a Saturday morning, going out to get some drinks and donuts for the kids, and imagined everything else that could have happened after. I never found out what came of it, and as far as I know, neither did my boss. I'm assuming nothing happened because I thankfully never heard anything on the news. Makes me wonder if they covered it up. And I hope they were able to find the asshole who did it. So, Dunkin' Donuts terrorist? Let's not meet. And I hope somehow you're rotting away somewhere. This occurred in 2017, and is 100% true. Due to a multitude of factors, including a recent death of a close friend, I was unbearably depressed at this time in my life. For that reason, my family flew across the country to visit me in LA, where I live. We thought it would be nice to visit Catalina Island. When we arrived, it became apparent to us that it was the off-season. It was late November. The weather was cold, and as a result, the island was nearly empty besides locals and a few straggling tourists such as ourselves. Our first priority was to ditch our luggage so we could explore the island. So we immediately checked into our motel. Though that word hardly does the place justice. I call it a motel because all the doors to the rooms exited to the outside, but in actuality, our room was one of 20 to 30 quaint guesthouse-looking buildings, arranged in sort of a horseshoe shape around a walkway, with rooms on either side of the path. The entrance to the motel was essentially one of the points of the horseshoe, and if you walked dead straight, you'd reach the room we were given. Essentially, on the corner before, you have to go right to go further into the horseshoe. So from our room, one path led back to the street, the other into the secluded maze of rooms. Stay with me. After a day of exploring, and having just finished dinner, it was time for the cold, dark walk back to the room. Catalina Island is a decent distance from the mainland, and let me just say, it gets dark. Similarly dark was my headspace after the dinner conversation took a left-hand turn, and my overwhelming depression got the best of me. I pulled my black hoodie tighter over my freezing ears and walked ahead of my parents to the hotel room, telling them I just needed to go to sleep. And I did. Immediately. Depression sometimes makes that easy. I was already losing consciousness as they entered after me, drifting off without so much as a good night. I then woke up to my mom saying my name. A harsh whisper. The room had two beds. My parents' bed, closer to the door, and mine, further in the room. My mom's voice cut through the silence again. She sounded concerned for me. I didn't blame her, considering my mental state at the time. Groggy, I rolled over. "What?" I asked. As my eyes adjusted to the dim moonlight coming in through the curtains, I saw her turn to face me. She was surprised to see me in my bed. Her eyes got wide. If I'm in my bed, who was she talking to? We both looked back to where she was previously looking to see a hooded figure in all black standing over their bed. I know this is Let's Not Meet, and you are reading this knowing a creepy thing is going to happen. But understand how horrifically startling it is to be on an island, in the middle of the ocean, and wake up to see a hooded stranger looming over you. This moment seemed to last forever. Life isn't like movies, where characters unleash a blood-curdling scream. Sometimes, the only thing that comes out is something panicked and guttural. My mom's words became low and severe as she said my dad's name in a dire voice I've never heard her use before. Then the hooded figure did something so bizarre and unsettling. It didn't advance towards us, but instead, crouched in the corner near where it stood. The way it crouched was so absolutely unexpected, even in regards to this already unexpected situation, that it terrified me. It seemed animalistic. I knew two things. The hooded figure had been standing over us sleeping, and it's not acting in any sort of way that I can understand. As opposed to the infinite moment of this figure standing over us mere seconds ago, the series of events that unfolded when my hulking ex-military dad woke up happened in an instant. Suddenly, we were out the door, not knowing which way the intruder went. My mom was screaming, "Get him! Get him!" My dad was running down one path of the horseshoe, further into the hotel, shouting through sheer adrenaline, "I'm going to fucking kill you!" I ran down the other path towards the street. When I got there, not a sign of the intruder. But it became suspiciously quiet behind me. I ran back to the room to find my dad quietly walking back, his head low. He gets really close to me and I hear him say, "It's a fucking kid." The explanation? Some young teen, tall and lanky as I am in my 20s, wearing all black, including a black hoodie, went into the wrong room. Our room. The one time my parents just so happened to forget to lock the door. My mom woke up when he entered, and, seeing a tall person in a black hoodie, thought he was me, assumedly leaving the room in a depressive episode. And when the hooded figure crouched, that was him realizing his mistake and panicking. He was scared of us. As I got back to the room, my mom walked out and hugs this kid, who was now crying his eyes out. I would be too if a massive ex-soldier was sprinting after me with murder in his eyes. So, to the now traumatized kids from Catalina Island, I look forward to reading your Let's Not Meet of this same event, from your perspective.
I'm posting here, as I think I'm finally ready to tell my story. I moved to Sandbach in Cheshire, England, around 3 to 4 years ago with an ex. Him and I had broken up by this point, and were just friends in the house we rented, and everything was great. We weren't hostile towards each other, and found out that we were better friends than in a relationship. I started going out to bars and local shops to make friends, and see if anyone was as lonely as me by this point. I moved from Chelsea, London, to be with my ex, and I didn't know anyone there. This was when I met Craig. Him and I became best friends quickly. He was a little odd, had a family in the area, and his own flat and etc. So, my ex moved away back with his family, and I couldn't afford the rent on my own. So Craig and I rented our own house in Worcester, where his dad lived. His dad would be a 5-minute drive away from the house we settled at. Him and I were just best friends. We didn't do anything romantically, sexually, and he always had a few poor girls in tow. He would tell each of them that they were the one for him and that he loved them and etc. He had found 7 girls on the go at one point. I started seeing this guy, Jay. He would stay over a few times and would eventually become my boyfriend. Craig hated it. We would argue about him. The fact that why should he care anyway? Him and I were only best friends, and he needed to stay out of my dating life. It was then things got physical. One night, Craig literally got on top of me in my room, put his knees on my arms, and started to strangle me. He was saying things like, "Where is he now?" And I honestly thought I was going to die. My brain switched to my mom, who was 4 to 5 hours away, and she would never know or would have to come to identify the body of her only child. I don't know what it was, but I managed to kick Craig and I ran. He had double-locked the front door. He had hidden my bag and had smashed my new iPhone that I had gotten from my parents for my birthday. I was literally running down the stairs with him in tow yelling that he's going to kill me. I knew the back door was open from him having a smoke earlier, and there was a garden gate. All I needed to do was open that. I ran for it, opened it, and made it. The next thing, I'm out on the street in short shorts and a pajama top barefoot. I just ran. I ran for a good half an hour towards town and used a payphone to call 999. The police picked me up. I couldn't get back into the house as Craig had my door key, and I told them the story. They took me to the station, had to unlock it as it was past 1 in the morning by now. They took photos of my neck that had bruising and my head that was bleeding where he had smashed me into the kitchen wall earlier. I had to sit in a patrol car to go to my house and they picked up Craig. He was on the streets looking for me. I had to point him out and say, "That's him! That's him!" to them. He said he was out looking for me as he was worried for me. I don't think that's true. I think he was out looking for me to silence me, so I didn't tell anyone. They arrested him, and I got told he would stay in a cell overnight, and a policeman let me into my house, as they used a key Craig had. While I was in the house alone, I gathered my things. I had left my laptop, some clothes, shoes, and makeup in a rush. I thought I could easily replace them, and I just wanted to get away, and I was so worried that he would come back any second through the front door. I had no purse, no money, no phone, and my parents lived 5 hours away. Thankfully, I don't know why, but I had the sense to hide my car key in my bra earlier that evening. I got into my car and drove to Morrison's petrol station. I was bleeding from my head, no shoes on, and bruised. I broke down there and used their phone to call my mom. At first, she was annoyed that I had woken her up, but then I explained everything to her. She ended up putting $200 in the petrol cashier's account for me to fill up my car, get some food and a hot drink to calm down. I then drove to my parents. I later got told through a friend of a friend that Craig got released in the morning as it was his word against mine, and he smashed my laptop up when he found out that I wasn't at home anymore. Whatever. My stuff got replaced and I am now with an amazing guy who treats me like a queen. Sometimes I get flashbacks of that night where I truly believed I could have died. As for Craig, I blocked him, deleted everything to do with his family and him, changed my number, and even broke off friendships with friends that knew me and him. Please, let's never meet again, because this time, I'll be ready for you.
I'll begin by giving a little background. At the time this happened, I was a 16-year-old female, working at a chain coffee place while in high school. I'm in college now. I'm 19. 7 hours away from said place. This happened at a time in my life in which I was super shy and had a tough time standing up for myself. In retrospect, I could have handled it a lot better. I used to work closing shifts with my best friend after school. It'd be like from 3 to 10 p.m. or 5 to 10 p.m. We worked at a relatively dead store, so we spent most of our time playing music and talking. We did our duties like taking the trash out and restocking, etc. Although, both of us always dreaded taking the trash out as we had to go out back. The dumpsters were behind the store in a dimly lit area next to a sketchy liquor store. One night, a man came in. It wasn't unusual to have customers near closing. It was just uncommon to see anyone we didn't already know. Our store was mostly just regulars. He was lanky and probably around 30. I mostly just remember his eyes. They were piercing. The type that never break a stare. I remember initially thinking he was attractive. Yikes. The way he spoke was short and concise. Just ordering a small hot latte. I made his order, and that was it. I told my friend about how I thought he was attractive, and we then started referring to him as the small hot latte guy. We always call people by their drink orders. He came a bunch of times after that, each time staying a little longer and longer, talking a little more and more. One day he came with a woman, presumably his girlfriend. I remember I felt a little weird, like she was staring at me or like they had spoken about me beforehand. She glanced over at him and said, "Wow, she is pretty." I didn't think much of it, said thank you, served them, and I thought that would be the end of it. He then began showing up and talking to me a lot without her. He started off as being friendly. I honestly don't even remember what we talked about. I think music? Then he got kind of flirty. Initially, I was just flattered, but being underage and immature, I didn't even think about the fact that it was kind of alarming. He began to stay for a while. Sometimes he would bring a laptop or a notebook. I could feel him staring at me and listening to our conversations. But at that point, I wasn't getting creep vibes from him. As my coworker and I had dealt with our fair share of creeps. He then somehow got my number. To this day, I honestly don't know how. He texted me, and somehow I still wasn't creeped out. We would talk about music a lot. Then I began to learn more about him. He was in his late 30s, and had prior problems with substance abuse that he never really got into. He went back to school for art and would show me his pieces. He'd also sent a lot of pictures of nature. I thought they were nice. Looking back, they were actually pretty creepy. For example, a picture of his backyard, sent at like 3 a.m. He'd stay and work on his art as well. He then told me he barely enjoyed hot lattes. He just wanted to come see me. He would come in and begin giving me gifts. This was the point I finally started realizing that I did not like the situation. He began by just giving little snacks or drinks. I would accept, but would never eat or drink them. It wasn't that I thought he had ill intentions. I just had a hard time accepting gifts. I remember one night he brought me a book about one of his favorite artists. I reluctantly took it, but had tried to decline before. I remember telling him about one of my favorite musicians and sent him a link to a performance I really liked. He started being kind of sexual, while still talking about the song. He then began talking super suggestively, and I would laugh it off and decline when he'd ask to send pictures. I began talking less and less and told my friend about the situation. She agreed that it was getting creepy and said I should maybe change my schedule. I told her I'd be fine. I'm stubborn. He'd still come every week at closing time, and he'd even stay in his car till we closed, meaning he'd watch me go to the back and take the trash out. I began making excuses as to why I couldn't talk and began going to the back of the store when I'd see him. He then sent me a bunch of text about how graceful I looked while working. I didn't respond. He kept texting me, and I told him I didn't want to talk anymore. He sent a bunch of messages describing how much I meant to him and how he wouldn't be okay. I started freaking out. I blocked his number. Still, I returned to work. I honestly thought he'd stop coming. I was wrong. I felt uneasy the whole shift. My friend said that if he came, to just go to the back and wait it out. I saw his car coming and my heart sank. I was on the verge of tears and hurried to the back. I could hear them talking, but couldn't decipher what exactly was being said. Then, about 10 minutes later, she came to the back. I could visibly see that she was upset. We ended up both just crying and hugging each other. Not the first time we've done that. She told me he kept asking to see me and asking how I was, and she just kept refusing. She told him how I was underage and how he made me feel uncomfortable. He wouldn't give up. Eventually, she threatened him and he left. We were both shaken up, but I thought it was over. It was time to take out the trash and lock up, and we both felt okay. I was opening the door while juggling like 3 bags of trash and saw something on the ground. I was confused at first, but then realized what I saw. It was flowers and a note. I felt sick to my stomach and looked around the parking lot. I didn't see his car. I threw them out immediately and told my friend I didn't want to read the note. She read it and told me I had to. It was something to the effect of, "I've never felt so connected to someone. You're breaking my heart. Please don't do this. I'm sorry," etc. Looking back, I honestly didn't lead him on, but initially, I just had felt as if I was in the wrong. Nonetheless, we turned the corner to take the trash out and both prayed the parking lot was empty. It wasn't. Let's just say the trash was not going to get taken out that night. I continued working there and still worked there on my breaks from college. I had different hours after that, and the summer I was going to leave for my freshman year, I saw him again. It was around 3 p.m. It was busy. We made eye contact. He left. That was the last time I saw him. Looking back, I was so naive and could have handled the situation so much better. I am forever thankful to my friend. So yeah, small hot latte guy who forever tainted my love for espresso? Let's not meet again.
So I'm a 23-year-old female. I live in a townhouse with my two children, 2 and 6 months old. My fiancé did live with us, until 2 weeks ago, when I caught him trying to fuck other women and made him move out. That's important to the story. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and when he did live with us, my ex worked evenings. And by the way, sorry for the long post. Let me set the scene. We live in a tiny town in northern Pennsylvania. My line of townhouses sits in front of a big field that runs to a line of woods. As far as I'm aware, these woods stretch for at least a few miles, and I'm not aware of any houses in there or any roads that lead through them. My living room has 3 windows that look to the field, and my bedroom on the second floor only has 1 window that faces that way as well. People do tend to walk their dogs back in the field, and kids sometimes play back there, but I rarely ever see anyone close to my house. For that reason, I tend to leave my blinds and curtains open, because I guess I just enjoy the view. So in July of 2019, I was laying in bed trying to fall asleep. All the lights were off, but I had my window and blinds open since it was so warm. I was looking out the window, and I had noticed small red and white lights just outside. I got up and looked, to realize that the lights were coming from a drone. I ran downstairs to where my fiancé of that time was sitting in the living room and ran to the window. I told him what I saw, but of course, when he went to look, it was gone. I was paranoid that the drone could have had a camera on it and someone was watching me with it. I kept my blinds closed for a while after that. Fast forward to January of this year, I guess. I stupidly got comfortable and assumed that whoever it was flying the drone was a one-time creep. My blinds were open, and I had just gotten out of the shower. I was sitting on my bed pretty much naked, except for my underwear. I was scrolling on my phone, when out of the corner of my eye, I saw lights again out of the dark window. It was that damn drone again. I ran out of the room and waited for a few minutes. I peeked out into my room, and it was gone. I quickly shut my blinds and got dressed. Honestly, I felt sick at how stupid I was to leave my window open again, especially when I was practically naked. Now, for the really disturbing part. My 2-year-old son and I were out in the field 2 weeks ago, just 3 days after I kicked my boyfriend out. We were playing ball. I had my 6-month-old strapped to me in a baby carrier. Probably about a half hour after we had been out there, I hear a slight whirring noise coming towards us. I looked up and saw that damn drone flying towards us. I looked around and didn't see anyone. It stopped right over us. I freaked and grabbed my son and dragged him into the house, looking back at the tree line every so often as we went, and I knew they had to be hiding in there. I went inside, closed the blinds, and called my mom and told her about the situation. She told me to keep an eye out. I said that I would. My son likes to line up his toys along the windowsill, so I figured it wouldn't hurt to open them up an inch or so. A little while later, after we ate dinner, and it was almost dark, I was feeding my 6-month-old, and my son was playing. He was standing over the window lining up his toys, when he started saying, "Dada, Dada." I assumed he was just missing his father, and dismissed him by saying he was going to see him that weekend. But he kept saying, "Tata, Tata." Though, I looked up and saw him pointing to the window under the little gap that the blinds didn't cover. I froze. I remember that he calls any man with facial hair Dada because it reminds him of his father. But there was no way someone would be bold enough to actually come up to my window, and not when my neighbors are literally right there. Anyone could see them. But there aren't any lights back there, so unless someone actually stepped out of their house, I guess nobody would see them. Maybe it was my ex, but he should be at work at that time. I ran to the window and moved my son. I didn't want to lift the blinds, but honestly, I was sure it had to be the person who had been creeping on me for the past year, and I wanted to see who it was. I pushed the blinds up and was looking at a man who I definitely had never seen before. He was crouching in front of me. He was bald with a mustache and a goatee, and I have no idea how old he was. He could have been anywhere from 30 to 50. When he saw me, he smiled and stood up. I yelled and told him to fuck off and that I was calling the cops. He just stood there, smiling at me like a freak. I was about to close the blinds again when he said something that I couldn't hear. I told him to leave again, and he said it louder this time. "I just want to talk to you." I shook my head no and yelled the same thing to him. He started slapping his hands on the window, yelling, "No, no," over and over. I grabbed my phone and, scared he was going to break in, I dialed 911. My kids were crying from the yelling, and I felt on the verge of tears. I told the operator what was going on, and the whole time that I was on the phone, the man was pounding on my window, screaming now. He was yelling all kinds of nonsense, and I only caught some of it. He said he's been watching me for months, and that I'm beautiful, and that he wants me to come with him, and that he'll kill my children if I don't. The operator told me to go into an upstairs room and hide until the police arrive. My town doesn't have any police department, so we rely on the state police. She said it would be about 20 minutes, but just to stay on the phone with her. The man was practically punching my window now and just screaming like a maniac. I was about to grab my kids and run upstairs when I heard someone else screaming. The man bolted. I looked out and saw my neighbor and his girlfriend. I opened the window, and my neighbor said that he heard the man, so he ran around the building. He said when the guy heard him, he ran back into the woods and disappeared in the tree line. They said they also called the police. I thanked them 100 times, and the police arrived 10 minutes later. They did a quick search around the buildings and in the trees, but obviously didn't find anything. I've been super paranoid since then and stayed at my parents' a few nights after it happened. I don't know why the guy targeted me or why he waited so long to do something. I'm just happy that my neighbors were there to intervene, or who knows what would have happened. So, to the creep who has been stalking me and my family for the last year, I genuinely hope we never ever meet again.
Longtime reader and first-time poster. This might not be written in the best grammar, so please forgive me. This story takes place back in April 2018. I live on Long Island and was in my freshman year of high school. I was going through a tough time. Earlier in the week, my girlfriend broke up with me because of rumors she heard about me, which I won't share on this subreddit. There was a lot of drama going around my life at this time. Depression, broken hearts, you know, typical high school bullshit. My mom knew I was down in the dumps, so one night, she took me to get a new phone in the nearby mall. I had an iPhone 5 at the time, going to an iPhone 8, so I needed a new one. We were gone for about an hour. We returned home with my dog greeting us. Let me tell you something about my dog. He's a short, stocky golden retriever who's never violent or vicious in any way. This is important for later. My dad was still at work, so it was my duty to take out the trash. I went through the front door, with my dog resting on the porch, and went to the side of my house to throw out the trash. When I was throwing the bag, I look over to my neighbor's house, where I saw a guy dressed all in black, around 6 feet, walking out of their side door. Being a paranoid 14-year-old, I had so many red flags going off. Let me tell you something about my neighbors and my neighborhood. I live in a safe neighborhood, but not 15 minutes walking distance away. We live by a town that has a high crime rate ranging from muggings, drug dealing, and even murders from time to time. My neighbors, on the other hand, have an older stepson who drag races in that part of town for some stupid reason. I wasn't in fight or flight mode yet, because I was assuming that this could be one of his friends. Stupid of me, I know. Until there was another man. And then another. There were 6 fucking guys dressed in all black coming out of the house and to the backyard. Then, I knew what was going on. So, I tried walking away as if I saw nothing. When I was on my driveway, I saw 2 of the 6 guys slowly walking towards me. My blood went cold within a second as they were getting close. My dog went running off the porch, chasing the 6 men down the street and chasing them into the night. My dog came back and I was still standing on my driveway trying to process what I just saw. I went back inside with my mom asking me what just happened. I told her what I just saw, with the 6 men coming out of the neighbor's house and heading towards me. We called the police and they came over to ask me questions. I described the 6 men as best as I could. The police told us we're not the first to experience this, as there were 7 burglaries all over town at the time, and I probably witnessed them attempting to break in. I told the officers about 2 of the 6 guys walking towards me after I saw them. They told me that since I saw them, they were trying to stop a witness. That was basically a friendly way of them saying that the burglars were going to kill me since I saw what they were doing. As typical as this could get, the best they could do was a police report. I was always afraid of break-ins, but I never thought I would experience one. To this day, I'm still surprised that my harmless golden retriever saved my life that night and showed me that no matter where you are in this world, this shit could happen anywhere. 4 years have gone by. My family now has a gun, and I am currently training in kickboxing for self-defense. To the 6 men who tried to break into my neighbor's house, let's not meet again. I love a good burglary every now and then. It's very satisfying to watch their confidence be replaced with terror when they see me without my mask. What? You didn't think I always wore this, did you? Thank you very much to Miss Creepy Tales for being a guest on our show today. It's always a pleasure to watch her spells misfire when she thinks no one's looking, but don't tell her I said anything. Her channel covers a wide range of horror stories that are thrilling to listen to. Check her channel out in the description below if you want to check her out. And of course, for this video, you know the drill. Like, leave a comment, subscribe if you're new, and make sure you turn on the bell notification if you just can't bear to miss any video that I release. I also upload every episode to the Silver Threads podcast for your audio listening pleasure. And for any business inquiries, please email me at storiesforsilverthreads@gmail.com. Thank you all for listening. And I'll see you next time with another story.